You're listening to Halford and Bruff.
Vrana drops to Braden Shen. In front for Vrana, he scores!
You know, obviously, D-zone coverage early on wasn't good, but, you know, Quinn Hughes was a monster.
You're a monster!
You know, if some of these guys think they're giving us everything in their tank, they're dreaming.
Good morning, Vancouver. 6:01 on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. It is Halford. It is Bruff. It is Sportsnet 650. We are coming to you live from the beautiful Kintech Studios in beautiful Fairview Slopes in Vancouver. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
Ada, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And Laddie, good morning to you as well.
Hello, hello.
Where did "You're a Monster" come from?
You're a monster.
That is a Shrek reference, my friend.
Okay. You're a monster.
You like that one, eh?
I don't know if I've just got the giggles this morning because I had a late hockey game and I'm working on about 3 hours of sleep. I'm like Apu in the convenience store, buzzing around like a hummingbird.
He's actually turned into a human. All right, focus, everybody. We got a huge show ahead of us. Halford and Bruff of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. Jason, tell them about Kintech real quick for me.
Well, we're coming to you live from the Kintech studio. Kintech Footwear and Orthotics, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, supported by over 2,500 five-star Google reviews. Find your perfect fit at kintech.net.
You're a monster.
You're a big footwear monster, Kintech. Okay. Hour one of this program is brought to you by Johnstone's Barbecues. You don't pay more to shop with the experts at Johnstone's Barbecues. They are open five days a week with two locations to serve you. Visit them online at johnstones.com. We have a big show ahead on the Halbro Experience. Guest list gets underway at 6:30. David Amber, Hockey Night Canada Sportsnet host, is going to join us here on the program. We will probably talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs, but late last night, the Winnipeg Jets became the main character in Canada with I watched the third period of just a terrible loss in San Jose to the Sharks. So you wake up this morning and all of a sudden that playoff chase that we were bemoaning yesterday because it was kind of getting lame, it got good in the West.
Because everything went against the Jets.
Yes.
They lose to the Sharks, the Flames won, and the Predators beat the Bruins.
Just hanging around the Predators. It's an amazing story. They sold everything at the deadline, and now they're 3 points out of a playoff spot. So we'll talk to David Amber about all that at 6:30. 7:30, Alexander Gonge-Ruzic. I did it. I pronounced it properly.
That was impressive.
Yeah. He's going to join us. He works for Between the Sticks, Northern Football. He's one of the better young, up-and-coming soccer journalists in the country. And we're bringing him on because Canada beat Honduras quite emphatically yesterday, 4-1 in Toronto. And that booked their ticket to the CONCACAF Champions League finals. It's the semifinal and final. In Vegas in June, which I think I'm going to go down for. I think I'm going to head down for
I was actually thinking of asking you, like, should we go to Vegas in June?
You want to go to Vegas?
I actually really like Vegas when it's super hot down there, too.
Yeah, like I'm assuming it's not exactly a tourist hotspot from Canadians going in June.
No, but it's still pretty busy. Like, yeah. I love the pool when it's like 100 degrees.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to go. I think it would be great.
Allegiant's got air conditioning, though, right? I mean, it does, right?
I hope so.
Yeah, okay. Thanks for inviting us, guys. We appreciate that.
Well, we're going to do that afterwards.
Have a nice trip together.
I wasn't going to invite them.
Yeah.
Really?
Okay. Laddie the whole time would be like, I don't even like soccer.
Dogs fly for free. You guys can come with us. Anyway, Alexandra Gonge-Ruzic is going to join us at 7:30 to talk about the latest triumph for Canada soccer. It's weird. It's still weird to me a little bit that Canada goes into these matches as a heavy favorite and then does the business rather easily.
Can I just say one thing that I enjoyed from that match?
What's that?
Was the fact that we learned that Canada now has a designated penalty taker.
Yeah, that's... I was not happy when that happened. So, for you know what? Who cares? It's early in the morning. I'll just explain real quick. Kyle Larin scored twice in the first 10 minutes against Honduras yesterday. Mm-hmm. He's been on fire. He's been terrific. So... then Canada got a penalty late in the first half, and Kyle Larin took it and missed. Now, this is a big deal because in the World Cup, you'll remember, Canada also missed a penalty of significance because Alphonso Davies took it.
And John Herdman afterwards was basically saying, like, well, I'll let the fellows on the field sort out who's going to take the PK. And everyone in Canada was like, that feels like a coach's responsibility.
Yeah. And then he took responsibility for it. He named Jonathan David the penalty taker, but Jonathan David gave the penalty to Kyle Larin yesterday, so now he's screwing it up. Whole thing's a mess. Anyway, we'll talk about that at 7:30. I won't bog down too much soccer talk early in the show. At 8:05, Murph's going to join us. Murph is working on a few hours sleep as well. He's like Jason Brough over here. He flew back from St. Louis last night after the Canucks lost 6-5 in overtime to the Blues, so he'll join us to talk about that. Speaking of the Canucks, we are giving away a pair of tickets yet again. Friday, March 31st, this Friday, it's the Canucks and Flames at Rogers Arena at 7 o'clock. We're giving away a pair of tickets to the best what we learned. If you want to get entered into the draw, text the Dunbar Lumber text line at 650-650. What we learned, hashtag it WWL. What did you learn over the last 24 hours in sports? Throw a ticket emoji in there, and you will be eligible for the grand prize draw for a pair of tickets to see the Canucks and the Flames on March 31st. That's this Friday. Okay, that is what's happening on the program. Laddie, let's tell everybody what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No. What happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
Missed it?
You missed that?
What happened?
What happened is brought to you by the BC Construction Safety Alliance, making safety simpler by giving construction companies the best in tools, resources, and safety training. Visit them on the internet at bccsa.ca. Canucks lose. I haven't said that in a while, but the Canucks lose, although it was in overtime, to the St. Louis Blues in the feisty battle for 23rd overall in the National Hockey League standings at the Enterprise Center on Tuesday night.
Yeah, after Quinn Hughes opened the scoring 6 minutes into the first, and remember that name, Quinn Hughes, a Guillaume Brisebois turnover led to the first of what was really an onslaught of Blues goals. In an eventual 5-2 lead for St. Louis, it was a sloppy performance, or at least the start to the game. The first two periods, the Canucks were sloppy. More reminiscent, I'd say, of their games under Bruce Boudreau than what we've seen for the most part with Rick Tocchet behind the bench. Now, Rick Tocchet has been behind the bench for a few games where the Canucks went back to their old ways of bad passes, failing to get the puck out, just overall silliness.
Yeah, silliness.
But remember, no lead is safe in the NHL, especially when the Canucks are involved, both when the Canucks have the lead and when they're in a multi-goal deficit, as they were last night. The Canucks had some really nice goals to tie this thing up. That fourth goal, where Petey and Kuzmenko worked the give and go.
It was very nice.
I think it was one of the nicest goals that we've seen this season. Do we have the audio on that call? I want to hear how Batch called it. How did Batch? Do we have Batch or Shorty's? Yeah,
I'd like to hear both. We'll take one.
Okay, Laddie, just that. Okay, so this is the Canucks are down 5-3 at this point, and two of the Canucks' best players this season hook up for yet another goal.
The near corner for Myers. Back to Kuzmenko. Middle of the ice for Pettersson. Left circle. In front, Kuzmenko scores! Wide open. What a pass from Pettersson to get it to him in the middle of the ice. And Andre Kuzmenko scores his second of the game to pull the Canucks to within one. It's 5-4.
It's better when those are scored at home, but yeah.
So a bunch of guys had multi-point games last night. Quinn Hughes, JT Miller, Elias Pettersson, Andre Kuzmenko, and Brock Besser, although he wasn't perfect last night, he does continue to pile up the points. The much maligned Brock Besser is now up to 52 points on the season.
I know we've talked about
this. He's not far away from being a point-a-game guy.
I know we've talked
about this. Didn't this happen last year, too? Yes. Everyone was like, he was playing okay, and then he gets like this pretty crazy point total for a guy that was just playing
well,
okay.
Defensively, you can still say he has
issues.
Issues sometimes, yeah. Right? But I think it's one of those things, and you know, the guys were talking about it a lot yesterday on the station. If him and Garland, and maybe we'll throw Beauvillier in there too, because remember, the Canucks have to clear cap space. This is not us saying, like, we want to trade these guys. They need to move money somehow.
Yeah.
So the more points these guys pile up, the better it is in terms of their market value, the less likely chance it is that the Canucks have to retain salary, and if they do have to retain salary, they might actually get something worthwhile in return. Like, it's good. I mean, now if you're acquiring Brock Besser and you want a detailed scouting report that goes beyond the point production, then you might have some like, okay, I don't know about this. Like, because defensively, his underlying numbers were, they must be improving because they were so bad to start the season, but he's still like a minus 17 or something along those lines. And I'm talking about like the nerd numbers.
They
were not good early in the season. And if you're a scout, you watch him play, you're like, that guy's not a speedster. But the bottom line for him, the production has been very, very impressive.
Okay, I just want to jump in and say this, though. When we talk about, and we've talked about this a lot this year, with how many good quality individual scoring campaigns the Canucks are going to have in this kind of lost season, right? Like Petey, and we'll get into Petey later because it's bordering on a historic season. It'll be one of the better scoring seasons in franchise history when Pettersson's done this year. And then Hughes, and a lot of people are texting in about Hughes as well, about how great he's been. Besser's got 52 in, I think it's 66 games. So not quite a point of game player, but pretty good production. You always have to understand, though, that within the context of the NHL, it's not like a remarkable scoring season. Like, scoring's up everywhere. That doesn't even put Besser in the top 100 in scoring in the league. Like, other guys that are scoring around Brock Besser's clip this year are like Max Domi and Rickard Rakell.
And Jonathan Huberdeau.
Right. Well, yeah. Like, Besser's contract looks amazing compared to Huberdeau's. But, like, again, like, you could have had Max Domi for a song this offseason. I think he signed for $2.5-3 million or something. Same thing with Rakell. Like, they're good players, but they're not, they're secondary scoring wingers.
But
right?
I think the point is as he is continuing to put up points, he's more tradable than he was
like,
a little while ago.
And give him his flowers. I don't really like saying that, but give him his flowers because he's had a really tough last couple of years. And for as maligned as he's been, and constantly his name has been in trade rumors this year, he's just kind of gone out and gotten better under Tocchet and done a nice job racking up points. Like, hey, you know what? Say what you will about the landscape and the context in which he's scoring, he's still scoring them. Like, someone else could be doing it, but Besser's the one out there producing. So good on him for doing it. But really, I mean, if you're going to talk about individual scoring campaigns, I'm assuming this is where we want to go next. It's Hughes and Pettersson in this time where you're kind of playing out the string and you're not really sure what these games are worth or how it's going to translate to next season. At the very least, you can say, man, Pettersson and Hughes are really responding well to that call to be leaders of this team, to be the 1A and 1B guys. And when you didn't know if there was going to be that real quick next step and next evolution in their games, there certainly seems to be.
Well, Tavi texts in, we need to start talking more about Quinn Hughes. I feel like we're talking about him a lot. At age 23, he's on pace for 82 points in 78 games. I personally think Hughes has a higher ceiling than Petey. And that's saying a lot. Tavi, why do you have to, you know, pit them against each other?
Yeah.
They're teammates.
They could both have equally high ceilings.
It's not a competition.
It's not a competition.
It is now. This is sports talk radio.
I guess it's professional sports, though, so maybe it is.
I suppose the NHL is. You know what? It just occurred to me. The NHL is a competition.
Yeah. Yes.
It's like almost they
do have to compete,
They're quote-unquote competing for a Stanley Cup.
Yeah. wait a minute. Okay.
Pettersson. I was just blown away by the pass that he gave Kuzmenko. Mm-hmm. Those guys really have chemistry together. And part of it is they're just two really good players. And those two really good players seem to play well together.
Yeah.
But that was a really, really nice give and go. And what's Kuzmenko up to now? 37, 38 goals, something along those lines?
Kuzmenko has 37 goals and 68 points in 73 games.
And then if you look at historically on the Vancouver Canucks, great individual seasons in terms of points. Elias Pettersson's now well into the top 10, and he's got a bunch of games left. So he's ninth overall in terms of scoring seasons for the Canucks.
Yeah.
He is 2 points behind Todd Bertuzzi, for example, of that terrific season Bertuzzi had in 2002-03, where he had 47 goals and 97 points. Now, before you text in and say, like, all these errors were different, like, yeah, I know.
That's not really the point, though.
But what we're saying is, like, Petey could, by the end of this season, have a top five in Canucks scoring history season. Now, the high watermark, and I don't think he's going to catch this, was Henrik Sedin in 2009-10 when he had 112 points.
That was the year he had 83 assists in 82 games. That was awesome. He had an assist. Yeah. He averaged an assist a game. He was, and that was...
That's when the Sedins were really right at the peak of their game. The following year, Daniel Sedin won the Art Ross Trophy. Yep. There was a Hart Trophy in there at some point. Now, Pavel Bure had a couple of seasons that were pretty good for the Vancouver Canucks. He had 60 goals and 50 assists in 92-93 for 110 points. Alex McGillney had 107 points. Marcus Naslin had 104 points. So there have been some guys that have reached that magical 100-point mark. JT Miller nearly did it last season when he had 99 points. I think Elias Pettersson, if he keeps going the way he does, or the way he has been, he can maybe reach 105 points, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, this is just estimated. Who knows? Which would put him above Marcus Naslin's high water mark of 104 points and then put him into the top five of scoring seasons for the Canucks. So what he's doing, granted, scoring is up, but I remember when I was first a very young Canucks fan, naive to the world, thought the Canucks would win the Stanley Cup. Patrick Sundstrom had 91 points and Tony Tanti had 45 goals. And those were the career best marks. And it was always a little bit embarrassing because the Canucks were one of the few teams in the NHL that had never had a 100-point guy. They'd never had a 50-goal guy. Mm-hmm. And you'd say things like, God, even the Winnipeg Jets have Howerchuk.
Yep.
Right? You know, this was when Gretzky was putting up over 200 points a season, and the Canucks were like, well, Sundstrom had a good season. He had 91, right?
I do remember. I mean, he's younger than you significantly, but I do remember. I remember that's why Bure was so fundamentally
and
important.
Then when Bure arrived, it all went out the window. Fun fact, the New Jersey Devils were the team with the Canucks that had never had the 50-goal scorer and the 100-point guy. Hmm. They still haven't.
Yeah, that's right.
The New Jersey.
I know who their guy is too.
Their New Jersey Devils have never had a 50-goal guy. Who's their leading scorer in that?
In a single season?
Yeah.
Brian Gionta.
Brian Gionta had like 48. And Patrick Elias nearly had 100 points. He had like 96 points or something along those lines.
I thought Sakura went off a couple of years, but the most he ever had was 35 with New Jersey.
Isn't that crazy, though?
Yeah.
Brian Gionta
never had it.
Brian Gionta scored 48. We're talking about Brian Gionta, by the way, on the Halford and Brough show. he scored 48 in that first year out of the lockout. And I want to say that he scored like 30 power play goals. You remember that first year out of the lockout where everyone feasted with the man advantage because there was like 12 power plays a game? Gionta scored half his goals on the man advantage. And you're like, wait a minute, what kind of world are we living in where Gionta's scoring nearly 50?
But
anyway,
so
Jack Hughes probably going to get there, you'd think.
Hopefully.
He'll
yeah.
be the guy
for their
it.
Sake.
Yeah.
So what the Canucks have right now in Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes is, frankly, one of the best centers in the league and one of the best defensemen in the league. So when, you know, this is why the debate about whether or not the Canucks should rebuild or not is so spicy, because there are some people on the rebuild side that are like, yeah, but they're still not in the playoffs. Like, and they've still got all these, you know, they got these bad contracts. They're going to have to, you know, get rid of. It's just really hard to improve this team.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
So, and then you're like, yeah, it is going to be challenging to improve the team. But then the people on the other side of the debate, they're like, yeah, but they've got Petey. They've got Hughes. They've got Demko. And these guys, they're not like 32 either. They're young players. Mm-hmm. What are you talking about rebuilding? You build around these guys. Like, you don't want to take a step back. You just want to keep trying to improve the team. And if that means trading away first-round draft picks to go get a legit top four defenseman like Filip Hronek, you go do it. The test of all this will be, well, it's a big test, but the first big test is going to be next season. Like, how's it all going to look, right? Right? Because the worst thing you can do if you're a general manager is have these great players, like elite players. They're elite players, right? They're up there with the best in the league, and waste them.
Yep. Pettersson's seventh in NHL scoring right now. So to distill everything Jason said earlier, if you've been a Canucks fan from day one or you've been a Canucks fan your entire life, Pettersson this year is putting together one of the five best offensive campaigns in franchise history.
Or he could, in theory.
He probably will.
Yeah.
So that's where you've got to understand. And that of those five seasons, only four guys have done them because two of them were from Pavel Bure. So right now you're looking at the season Petey is having is going to go down in the pantheon, the Mount Rushmore of Canucks lore alongside Sedin, Bure, McGillney. And then there's Pettersson. So he's entered that class. He's got more points than Nathan MacKinnon, Mitch Marner, Jason Robertson, Tage Thompson. Like, it's an elite level year, right? And yeah, you can both sides the thing and you can play devil's advocate and you can say, yeah, well, it's coming on a team that it's coming on a team where they're not very good and they're out of the playoff chase. I mean, in the same token, in the same breath, I was watching the Sharks game last night against the Jets. And by the way, the Jets are a disaster. Erik Karlsson's probably going to win the Norris on one of the worst teams, maybe the worst team in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
So some of it is like, yeah, the context and the environment in which you're doing it. But the other part of it is like, understand that this is a very, very elite level offensive campaign. And Pettersson's forced himself into that conversation where you're saying he's a top 10 scorer in the NHL. He's one of the top centers in the NHL. And so it goes back to what you're saying. That debate between do you tear it back to the studs? Do you build around this? The frustrating part, and I think maybe this is the thing we should focus on, are the fans that are saying there are the pieces there, but the work done around the edges has been so poor. Filling out this roster, getting the right coaching staff involved, making sure that there are young guys coming up on their ELCs, not having anchor contracts, and most importantly, not having a good blue line to insulate around Hughes and a good blue line to prop up the rest of this team and to help out Demko, that's where people get frustrated.
Yeah, we got a bunch of texts in. You know, I was talking about the New Jersey Devils and how they've never had a 50-goal guy and a 100-point guy. Text in, the Devils have won the Stanley Cup. Yeah, yeah, it doesn't...
Three times.
No, they won it during an era where scoring was down. But... It's a good point to make because the Canucks have had a ton of great individual scoring performances this season. You run down the list. Quinn Hughes, great. Elias Pettersson, awesome. Andre Kuzmenko, terrific. JT Miller's going to have another good scoring season. There are guys that are putting up points, but there's more to hockey than putting up points. The reason the Canucks are going to miss the playoffs is because they were terrible defensively early in the season. And as we saw last night, they still ain't perfect. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes their goaltending hasn't been very good this season. Early on for Thatcher Demko. And then when Thatcher Demko got hurt, all the other guys that they tried didn't get the job done. So there are still improvements to be made. It's a fascinating situation the Canucks are in. It really is. Because you go back to this debate where on the one side you have these people that are like, yeah, but they've got Pettersson and Hughes and Demko. Like, you want to rebuild? Mm-hmm. But the rebuilders are like, yeah, look at where they are in the standings. They're a bad hockey team still. And it's going to be very challenging to get better. And that last part is the key. And that's going to be the challenge on management because they've chosen a route. They've chosen the route to get better around Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson and Thatcher Demko and Kuzmenko, and they've said, we don't want to take a step back. Some of you are wanting to take a step back. We've got these great young players. How are we going to take a step back? So the rest of us are kind of like, all right, well, go improve the team, and we'll see you next season. And by the way, those first 10 games, you better not screw them up.
Speaking of teams in an interesting position, the Winnipeg Jets last night. The only other thing I want to get to in what happened, because the Jets are in such a bad way right now that I am looking at this and, you know, we do the Schadenfreude thing here. It's like, well, if we can't have anything nice, let's bask in someone else's failures. The Winnipeg Jets lost 3-0 in San Jose. I was watching the broadcast and I think they mentioned, I don't know, at least 10 times about how the Jets were losing this crucial playoff game to one of the worst or playoff pursuing games to one of the worst teams in the NHL. It was a disaster. And if you woke up this morning not knowing the scores, you look and see all of a sudden that Winnipeg is just 2 points up on Calgary, for that final wild card spot with equal games played. Perhaps more interestingly, Nashville, who also won last night, is now just 3 points back with two games in hand. Even more interesting, and I want to play this audio before we go, this is Rick Bowness after the game last night, because he kind of took his team to the woodshed on the weekend after they lost to LA. He was real upset, real angry following that loss in San Jose last night. This is Winnipeg Jets head coach Rick Bowness after the 3-0 loss in San Jose.
The inconsistencies of some of our players is hurting us. You know, if some of these guys think they're giving us everything in their tank, they're dreaming. So we got a lot of guys in there giving us everything they can, and we just need a few more guys to jump on board. It's not over. We're still in eighth spot, and we're going to find out what we're made of over the next little while.
Coming up next on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650, David Amber is going to join us to talk about the Jets, the Leafs, everything that's going on across Canada as we inch closer and closer to the start of the Stanley Cup playoffs. You are listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Everything Canucks before and after the games. Canucks Central with Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Besser near circle, back to the line for Hughes, he scores! Teed it up from the top of the point, and the Canucks tie the game in the final minute of the third period.
Yeah, I mean, he's just
assertive.
Very assertive, you know, just all facets of the game, you know. Just I love his compete tonight. Even when it was 5-2, he was, you could tell he had the gleam in his eye, like he didn't think we were out of it. So, and obviously, he was the main reason why we got back into it.
6:33 on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. Hour one of this program is brought to you by Johnstone's Barbecues. You don't pay more to ship with the experts at Johnstone's Barbecues. They are open 5 days a week with two locations to serve you. Visit johnstones.com. I said ship. I should have said shop. The cursor was over the O. Right. On my screen. So that was a problem.
You really are Ron Burgundy.
That was a problem.
Fooled by the old cursor.
Don't pay more to ship. Are they shipping barbecues? No. You're shopping for barbecues at Johnstone's. Visit them online at johnstones.com. That audio that we played coming back from break, that was Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet talking about Quinn Hughes, who continued his very impressive campaign with another performance last night that moved him now to second in defenseman scoring in the NHL, trailing only Erik Karlsson. Of course, he's trailing Karlsson by nearly 20 points, but still, it's nice. He moved ahead of Josh Morrissey.
He's got a gleam in his eye. I wonder if it's the same gleam that Oliver Ekman-Larsson has. Because Rick Tocchet said OEL's got a gleam in his eye about next season. There's just so many gleams. The whole defensive core is just gleams in the eye.
That was, you remember Marty Schottenheimer? He's passed away since.
Yes.
That was his thing when he was a coach, is he used to walk around the field. Now, he didn't say there was a gleam in the eye, but he would walk around the field pregame, especially when it's cold and there was there was a mist with some sun hitting it. And he would say, "There's a gleam, gentlemen." And all the guys would be like, "What's he talking about?
What the hell are you talking about?
I have no
Who's
idea.
He talking to? He's talking to the goalpost."
Let's go to the phone lines now. We are joined by David Amber here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Good morning, David. How are you?
Yeah, there's a gleam in my eye with the playoffs on the horizon.
I was going to say, you know, last night we actually got excited again. We run hot and cold here at this show. So yesterday we were bemoaning the fact that there were no good playoff chases going on in the NHL. And then we woke up this morning and we're like, well, wait a minute. The West is back, baby. It's back. So Winnipeg loses in really bad fashion last night in San Jose. And then Calgary and Nashville win. So we wake up this morning and it's a bona fide race back in the West. But the big story out of this is the Canadian team in Winnipeg, who is in an awful way right now. I'm sure you saw it. I don't know if you heard Bonus's comments after the game, but let's just say this. The Jets are a mess right now.
What did Bonus say after the game? I didn't hear it.
He said if he thinks all the top players are giving their all, they're dreaming. And I think this is a direct shot at Scheifele, Wheeler, Connor, and whomever else, because the Jets have been shut out 3 times in their last 7 games, including last night. They have 9 goals in their last 7 games, so the top guys aren't producing.
Wow. I mean, I didn't see this coming, guys. Remember how good the Jets were in the first, you know, 2.5 months of the season? Mm-hmm. I do a lot of shows where, you know, it's almost talk radio format where we have these debates. And I distinctly remember, like, mid-November, early December, we're having the debate, who's the best team in Canada? And, you know, a few people were saying the Leafs, a few people were saying the Jets, a few people were saying the Oilers. Like, that, they were a legit top 10 team in the NHL. And to see them floundering like this is shocking. And I was doing the games last night with Mike Fuda, and the Oilers intermissions, the Canuck intermissions, the Calgary intermissions, we're trying to keep our eye on everything. And we're talking about the Predators big win in Boston and Calgary. And I basically said, yeah, but you know, the Jets are gonna beat San Jose. There's no way they're gonna lose to this team that, you know, had one win in their last 15 games. They're, you know, in full disaster mode in San Jose, and you're desperate for points. I don't have an answer for it, guys, but you're right. The glass half full part of me is like, okay, great, we have a race now, because the Jets have been floundering so badly that they've allowed the Predators and the Flames back into this thing.
Well, it's funny, we were talking about the Jets yesterday on our show because Elliot Friedman and Jeff Merrick were talking about the Jets on 32 Thoughts, and this was before the San Jose game. They were just wondering, like, is this it for the Jets core? You know, Blake Wheeler's 36 years old. He's got 1 year left on his deal before he's UFA. But more importantly, the two guys that are in that same contractual situation, Mark Scheifele, 1 year left on his deal before he becomes UFA, and the same with Connor Hellebuck. So you got to wonder if the Jets go into this offseason and go, where are we going here, guys? Like, Dubois wants out. He's wanted out for a while now. And most people in Montreal are already preparing for his arrival. If you don't have those guys, then what do you have? Now, I suppose they could run it back again and go, okay, well, we'll just run out the contracts of Scheifele or Hellebuck, or maybe you want to re-sign them. There's a debate, but Scheifele's, you know, almost he's 30 years old, so that's a tough decision. And do those guys want to stay in Winnipeg? My point is there's so much uncertainty in Winnipeg, and it seems to be trending towards breaking up this core, especially if this core is playing this way.
100%. You know, there's so much chatter in the city. I live in Toronto about, you know, if the Leafs lose to Tampa in the first round again, you can't just keep running it back, running it back, running it back. You know, we could say the very same thing for Winnipeg, right? Winnipeg was 3 wins away from the Stanley Cup final in 2018. And, you know, kudos to Kevin Cheveldayoff and that whole management staff. They've had incredible patience. And, you know, now we're seeing there's some little, you know, chips in the armor. I mean, right, we see Paul Maurice walk away mid-season. You don't see NHL coaches just get up and leave. Bruce Boudreau, if anyone was going to get up and leave, it was Bruce Boudreau with everything going on around him this year. And he stuck it out. Guys don't walk away from one of 32 jobs. Paul Maurice gets up and walks away. That was maybe our first indicator that, you know, it's not all perfect out in Winnipeg. And then when the season started, well, and I was saying, you know, touting bonus, you know, coach of the year, like, this is a great story. He stabilized this team and they're playing with fun. Their guys are loving going back to the rink. And I don't know what's happened there, but I can tell you, if they don't make the playoffs, I don't see any way where they're just going to say, all right, well, let's give it another shot. They've been more than patient there, guys. And you have this great core of players, but the results just haven't been there for some time now. And something seems off, and there'd have to be a serious shakeup. I mean, this could be a very interesting offseason for a number of Canadian teams. We all know, you know, in Vancouver, we're all waiting for some moves to take place, some complementary moves to the ones that have already taken place. And certainly, depending on how the Leafs do in the playoffs, Calgary, there's going to be some changes there, regardless of what happens. I think it's safe to say there's something's going to have to give there. And Winnipeg's another marketplace, you know, barring them having, you know, an unexpected, you know, making the playoffs in a deep run now, something's going to implode there for sure. So I think 32 Thoughts, and you guys are certainly onto something.
The Toronto Maple Leafs, tell us what's at stake in these playoffs.
Everything. I mean, you don't want to, I mean, it's at the end of the day, it's professional sports, and, you know, it's not life and death, but as far as from a professional trajectory, you know, the Leafs have to have some level of success. You know, not only do they have to win a round, there's no scenario where they lose a round, you know, where it's just going to be status quo. If they lose in the first round, I don't care what the circumstances, game, you know, quadruple overtime, game seven, there just has to be changes, because you can't just keep, you know, doing the same thing and expecting different results. If, and granted, they've made a number of changes. If they beat Tampa and then they have a hard fought series against Boston, which is, you know, proven themselves to be the best team in the NHL this year from start to finish, there won't be any shame in that. But there still could be some tweaking that takes place, but a lot to line here. I mean, they've done everything they can do, right? This management team has made the changes it's had to make. You know, they've given Sheldon Keefe the green light to manage this team on the bench as he sees fit. And, you know, a lot's at stake. I don't know how else to put it, guys. I mean, you know, they've Kyle Dubas feels he's created a team with more pushback, more compete level, more experience, more depth, whatever words you want to use. And the pieces are in place. And if somehow it doesn't matter and they still can't get past the first round, then changes will have to take place. And it could be from the top down. It's not just a player and even coaching thing. It could be everything. So this is huge. And I don't want to overstate it and be dramatic, but, you know, in sports terms, there's only, you know, so much leeway you have. It's a results-oriented business. And if they, once again, don't have a result, and I could tell you guys, it'd be a historic loss, right? Like, this is going to get more traction. No team has ever been eliminated in the first round seven straight times. No team ever in the history of the NHL. The Leafs are tied now with the Hartford Whalers. Had this happen to them once, six times in the first round in a row. So this would be a historic loss, and I don't need to tell that to Leafs fans, you know. And they're not just playing for these last 6 years, but it's, again, it's 2004. We're talking 20 years of ineptitude on some level, right? So a lot is at stake in Toronto.
Austin Matthews could, in theory, sign a contract extension this offseason. He's got 1 year to go, and then he's UFA. So that sets him apart from Elias Pettersson in Vancouver, who still has a little bit more club control. Is the general expectation that he's going to re-sign, or is there a lot of chatter about, hey, if things continue to go badly, and especially in the first round of the playoffs, because for the most part they've gone pretty well, that Austin Matthews might be like, nah, I don't know if I want to be here anymore?
That's a great question. I'll be honest with you. The chatter about Matthews and his, you know, pending UFA situation, it's been quieter, but it always picks up. It hits a fever pitch. I mean, it hit a fever pitch last year when they lost after game seven. What does this mean for Austin Matthews? You know, they've never been able to get through a round. You know, it's really interesting. Do I think he likes playing in Toronto? Yes. I base that on what he says. I base that on, you know, knowing a little bit about him. You know, Toronto, he is an alpha male through and through. And, you know, there are a few better places I would imagine to win in the NHL than in Toronto. And I put Vancouver in there too. I mean, you're, you know, talking to the likes of Kevin Bieksa and, you know, when I've talked to the Sedins, like, when things are going well, being in a city that cares as deeply as the fan base in Vancouver and Toronto and Montreal cares, there's value in that. You know, I don't think Austin Matthews wants to go to Arizona. I don't think he necessarily wants to go to Arizona. And to win in Arizona is different than to win in other markets, right? Let's be honest. So I think in his heart of hearts, he would love to win here, much like Connor McDavid would love to win in Edmonton. But if it seems like it's a hopeless situation and there are other options that might seem greener pastures, you know, a year from now, then all bets are off. I think the perfect scenario for the Maple Leafs would be have some level of success this postseason and do their best to lock up Austin Matthews. And I'm sure that's what the game plan is. I don't think it is to play this out till the end of his contract, because you don't see that happen with superstars in this league. They either sign long-term in the place they're in, or they're not going to be there long-term.
You know what I can't wait to see is the coaching matchup between John Cooper of the Bolts and Sheldon Keefe of the Maple Leafs. Like, are the Lightning going to, I know it's not the 70s, the 80s or 90s anymore, but are they going to goon it up a little bit? And are the Leafs, have the Leafs made all these moves to try and be more receptive to that and able to push back on that? Or might the smarter move just be like, yeah, let them goon it up. We'll try and score some goals here.
That's such a great question. We had this exact conversation on Hockey Central yesterday with Anthony Stewart and Mike Feuda and myself. And, you know, Anthony's take was, we saw what happened in Saturday in Boston. Very first shift of the game, Pat Maroon basically forced a fight with the Bruins and sort of said, this is how we're going to play and we're going to get into the trenches. And the Bruins are the Bruins. They're like, okay. And the Bruins ultimately won the game. The Leafs have the second best, maybe third best power play in the league. It's not Oiler, you know, it's not an automatic goal like the Oilers, but it's damn good. And, you know, a few years ago, Kyle Dubas said, our strength is our power play. They have brought in a group of players, you know, Lafferty, McCabe, Noel Achari, guys who are very comfortable crashing, banging, playing a more physical brand of hockey. You know, Ryan O'Reilly, it's not that he's going to fight, but he's not a small man. And he's very, you know, he came from the St. Louis system where that's a grinded out type of hockey. So the Leafs are more prepared. Luke Shen, I don't need to tell you, is no wilting flower. Mm-hmm. The Leafs are more prepared for that. But I do agree with you. I think it behooves them to say, let's play a style of hockey that, you know, Corey Perry, Pat Maroon, Belmar, Tanner Janot are very comfortable playing. It's maybe behooves the Leafs to do that, right? I think they feel they don't need to do that necessarily. And you're right. I'm very interested to see in game one how the tone is set for the series. And if you remember last year, guys, Kyle Clifford was dressed for game one. He took a bad, I think it was a double minor. In fact, he might have taken a 5-minute major in game one. Mm-hmm. The Leafs actually killed it off and they won game one 5-0. But Clifford was out of the lineup and Wayne Simmonds came in game two and he only played a handful of minutes. And then that was the last of Wayne Simmonds we saw after game two. So I think if the Leafs are smart, they're going to play they have the personnel there to push back, but you don't need to be forced into the trenches when you don't want to go there. And if Tampa wants to play, an undisciplined brand of hockey, you can make them pay with the power play.
So I think we should check in with you every week and ask you this question. Who is going to start for the Leafs in game one?
It's been the same answer for at least for me for weeks now. I mean, Ilya Samsonov has been the more consistent goalie, right? He's been more consistent and he's been more healthy. What you'll get from him in the postseason is yet to be determined, right? That is the one massive, massive question mark. You have Matt Murray, a two-time Stanley Cup winner, but has been inconsistent for a number of years and unhealthy for a number of years. And you have Ilya Samsonov, who's been a better goalie this year, but doesn't have any track record in the postseason. What does that mean? Will that moment be too big for him when it's game one and you're at Scotiabank Arena in Toronto and there's a nervousness surrounding the team and surrounding the fan base and driven hard by the media because of the history of this team? Can he handle that moment? So to me, it's a no-brainer. It's Ilya Samsonov right now. And you have the ability then to call on a two-time Stanley Cup winner if he falters and sort of say, okay, Matt, you've been in this situation before with Marc-Andre Fleury and where you guys shared the net for back-to-back championships. We're calling on you now. To me, it's a no-brainer. It's Samsonov. You know, even if Murray runs off, the Leafs have, what, eight games left? Even if Murray runs off, you know, four or five solid starts in these last eight games, I'm not going to suddenly, in my mind, change my opinion of it. I think we've gone 6 months now, and Samsonov's been incredibly good. And I think that's where you start, and you go from there. So, to me, you can ask me this next week, and maybe I'll have a different answer. But at this point, I think it's a Samsonov or bust game one for the Leafs.
Is that the most likely Achilles heel, though? Because I see a lot of criticism for example, the Leafs' blue line. Like, I know they've mm-hmm. got, like, 900 defensemen now, but, like, I think there's a lot of people out there that are like, yeah, but is any one of them, like, a number one guy? And I see Morgan Rielly getting a lot of criticism, and I feel in some ways that it's about, yeah, sometimes it's his poor play, but it's, you know how these defensemen, they're like, they'd be a really good number two, but because they're not a number one, like in the Norris Trophy conversation, maybe they don't control the play like the best in the game do, they get criticized for that.
I think if the Leafs falter and goaltending, you know, is a part of it, like they get out goaltended, which has happened basically all last, the last six playoffs, they've had goaltending that was maybe okay enough to win a series, but it certainly wasn't as good as the opposition, right? Whether it was Tuukka Rask or last year it was Vasilevskiy, and they lost to Korpisalo in Columbus. They obviously lost to Carey Price in Montreal. Like, they've had reasons. The goalies on the other side have been world class, but that's been the big question mark surrounding this team. Is the goaltending enough? I think there was questions about the blue line. You just brought up Morgan Rielly. There was questions about it, but now they have 9 serviceable NHL tested defensemen. You know, the depth there is incredible. And you could argue their defense is good enough to bring them through the playoffs. We're going to find out about the goaltending. And it's not an easy path, right? It's Vasilevskiy, and then conceivably it's Ullmark who's going to win the Vezina, and Swayman. I mean, that's a really formidable duo in Boston, right? This is what's going to make this first round of the postseason. I always get excited for the playoffs, guys. But this year, and we were talking about this yesterday, you know, New Jersey versus New York, potentially, mm-hmm. you know, Dallas versus Colorado. Are you kidding me? That could be a Western Conference final. And right now that could be the first round matchup, right? Dallas versus Colorado, Edmonton versus LA, and Toronto versus Tampa. Those are just 4 of the series. Those are all the 2-3 potential 2-3 series. It's going to be fantastic, guys. We're in for a real treat, and I'm excited about it. But yeah, you know, to try and answer your question, goaltending to me is the one remaining big question mark, and it's been really for a number of years here, and it didn't work with Freddie Anderson, and we'll see how it works now with Samsonov and Murray, and it's a massive, massive question mark surrounding the Leafs.
So every team in the NHL now is with fewer than 10 games remaining. So the playoff push is 100% underway. It's going to be fun to see how it all plays out. David, thanks for doing this. We really appreciate it. Enjoy all the action this week. We'll do this again next week.
Yeah, anytime, guys. Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it. That's David Amber, Hockey Night in Canada, Sportsnet NHL host here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
I can't wait until the playoffs, but I'm a little annoyed that my excitement is coming through other situations. Like, not one in Vancouver.
It's going to be this way. No, it's always this way.
I know.
Except in the years that they make it, which aren't many. Every year we do the same song and dance. We look at each other and we're like, all right, it's time to get excited about someone else's playoff chances.
I missed the car flags.
Remember when
I missed the feeling on the first game of the playoffs and when everyone's like thinking about the game all day.
Yeah, you can still put on a car flag if you want.
And then when you get into the series and just like the how a series evolves and you're living it day by day, it's so much fun.
I remember when you had, and it wasn't that long ago, you had your affair with the St. Louis Blues because you just wanted to feel something again.
Just wanted
to feel playoff hockey.
And then I flew to St. Louis and they got bombed by the Boston Bruins. I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot. I hate this feeling.
Yeah, I'll never forget. Like someone that didn't know a lot about hockey, but they were asking about work and they were like, oh, why is Jason gone? Mm. And I'm like, oh, you went on a vacation. They're like, where? And I was like, St. Louis.
Halford, just put on the car flag. Go for it. No one's going to judge you.
That was Brough.
He's Brough.
I'm Halford. Hi,
no.
You're Andy.
What? I don't even, like, I think I threw my car flag away like 5 years ago. I was just we don't need this thing. I don't know where it is.
Part of the fan experience is buying a new car flag.
It's in storage somewhere. Yeah. You know, I love that feeling where the whole city's talking about it. Even not hardcore fans, like the local news is.
There's an electricity. I know it sounds like a cliche, but there is an electricity in the air.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah. I miss it.
You get your playoff towel, and then you go and use it as a dish rag for the next 4 years.
Yep,
you know,
those
playoff towels are falling apart.
You know what?
So long ago.
Trade the first round pick. Let's get another D-man in the door. Let's get to the playoffs next season.
I want
to
trade the 2024 and 2025 first
round
picks. I want them all out the door.
Trade every future that the Canucks have for a first round appearance next season. What do we got coming up in the show?
7 o'clock, we got an open segment. 7:30, Alexander Gongre-Ruzic is going to join us on the program. We're going to talk about Canada's 4-1 win over Honduras yesterday in CONCACAF football. We'll talk about Canada booking a ticket to Vegas this summer to compete in the CONCACAF League Finals. And then at the 8 o'clock hour, we're going to talk to Murph. And then at 8:30, we're going to do what we learns. And we're going to give away a pair of tickets to see the Canucks and Flames on Friday. Yes, this Friday, March 31st at Rogers Arena. If you want to win the tickets, send a What We Learned into the show. Text line is 650-650. That is the Dunbar Lumber text message in basket. Hashtag it WWL. Put a ticket emoji in, and it's your chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Canucks and Flames on Friday night from Rogers Arena. Big show ahead, another 2 hours still to come. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
There's a gleam, man. There's a gleam. Let's get the gleam, all right? Let's go. Ahead, go.